Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here for another episode. Now, we all understand the importance of learning from other industries. We all understand the importance of crafting a terrific patient experience. We know that patients will leave with a story to tell, and we want to craft the story that they do leave with so that they can tell a great story about us and our practice. And my guest today is Dennis Snow, who's had more than 20 years experience working on customer experience with the Disney Corporation. He spent 20 years with Disney at Walt Disney World, and in his last year with Walt Disney World, Dennis's leadership performance was ranked in the top 3% of the company's leadership team, which is phenomenal. Now, Dennis is now a full-time speaker, trainer, consultant, and is really dedicated to helping organizations achieve their goals in the areas of customer service, employee development, and leadership. He's the author of 2 best-selling books. The first one is called Lessons from the Mouse, and the second book is called Unleashing Excellence. So if you want to find out more about Dennis and his work, head across to snowassociates.com and check it all out. There's a ton of stuff there. But in our conversation with Dennis, we spoke a lot about his personal journey in 2021, the lessons he'd learned about having some challenging times through COVID. But we also spoke about particularly the lessons from Disney, the lessons around service, the things that are really applicable to dental practice that I know that if you take heed of these lessons, you can apply in your practice as well. You can make sure that your patients are leaving with an amazing story to tell so that you get more patients through word of mouth referrals, you get better reviews, and overall, your patient satisfaction and retention is really through the roof. So there's a lot of wisdom, a lot of gold in this particular conversation. And as I always say, please do have a pen and paper handy because there's tons of things you're going to be able to take away and implement into your practice. So without any further ado, here's Dennis Snow. Dennis Snow, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us all the way from Orlando. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. All the way from sunny, getting hotter Orlando.
I know, and we were just comparing, we're in Canberra getting colder by the day, you're getting warmer by the day, so yes, I'm a little bit jealous if I'm honest with you.
Don't be too jealous, because hot in Florida is really hot.
Is it? Very humid too, correct?
Very, that's what really does it, is the humidity.
See, I think I'm one of the rare people on the planet that really likes humidity. I grew up in the tropics. My parents lived overseas in Papua New Guinea as I was growing up, so I grew up in humidity. So for me, it's got a summer holiday feel about it. I don't know why. It's just
there you go. Yeah, you're the one. You're the one that actually likes it.
I'm the one weirdo, right?
Yeah.
So there we go. Now, Dennis, you are incredibly well known around the world for helping people craft and execute a wonderful customer experience, you know, customer journey, and so on and so forth. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. And obviously, the author of a couple of books, Lessons from the Mouse, and so on. But before we do get into that, I do want to just take a moment, because 2020 and now 2021 have been the year of the pandemic, or the years of the pandemic. And you in particular have had a difficult situation in 2020. I was going through your website and I noticed that you'd been through a personal battle with cancer, and I know you're through that. So thank goodness you're healthy and well, which is fantastic. But what I wanted to talk about is, I know you've been able to draw some lessons from your experience of treatment and make that relevant to customer experience. But before we get to those particular lessons, I wanted to ask you a little bit about life reflections, because 2020 for me, on a personal note, and for many others, was a moment to pause, to reflect, to reassess. And I imagine having a cancer diagnosis is a double reason to pause and to reflect and reassess. And I'm curious to ask you, what thoughts or what lessons or what insights came out of that? And were there any gifts that came along with it? I know that sounds a weird thing to say, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, it was a surprise. I mean, it really came as a shock, because I was actually feeling fine when I was diagnosed with cancer. And so initially it was, denial. No, I'm fine. You know, I feel great. I work out, I eat right, and so forth. But then it did settle in that, I did have cancer. And going through, it was about 3 months of treatments that I went through, chemo and radiation. And so I got the double gift of time, one with COVID-19, making everything quarantined and working from home and everything. And then just dealing with the effects of the chemo and radiation treatment, it gave me time to think about the things that are really important. And I, I've reflected on these things many times, but now I had this big chunk of time to really think about what's important to me. And my family, I've got a couple of grandkids, and they're just, my eyes just light up when I see the grandkids. And so spending time with them, thinking about my business and where I want to take my business and the true purpose behind what I do is to bring kindness to the world. And I happen to do it through talking about customer service, but that's my spin on the kindness subject. I think being kind to each other is critical in life, certainly, but also in business. So I kind of, reflected more on that, doing a lot of writing, doing a lot of videos, and a lot of time in gratitude as well, that they were able to treat my cancer. I'm very thankful that everything turned out okay. As you said, I did learn some things that I could apply to the business side of what I do from my cancer journey. So while I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, there were some benefits that came out of it. And I think that I'm more introspective now than I was before.
Yeah. I wondered if that might be the case. As I said, 2020 was a year of introspection for me as well. And I was just thinking about your journey and trying to put myself in your shoes. And I thought, wow, there must have been a lot of reflection and introspection on that. And it sounds like there was. Just on kindness, you've touched on a subject that I didn't actually intend to go to today, but we've started with the heavy stuff. So sorry for going straight out of the gate. That's pretty hard.
Wherever you want to go, I'm ready for the ride.
Cool. Kindness is one of my core values, actually. And I sometimes think that in our busy world, it's one of those things that's easy to let go of, not because people are deliberately malicious or not because people are uncaring, but because it takes time and effort and I guess presence of mind to actively be kind. And I wanted to ask you about kindness in the modern world generally and what role you see for kindness and how we can all be a bit more conscious of being kind to our neighbors.
Well, you use the word presence, and that's what it takes, I think. That is, we have to be in the moment. We have to be present if we're truly going to be kind. And a couple of quotes, there's one quote, I think it's Aristotle or Socrates or one of those, said something that I think we should all live by. It said, every person you meet is facing a battle that you know nothing about, so be kind. And I always loved that. I had a boss when I was at Disney, and I was just promoted into my first management position, and I was getting ready to give a reprimand to somebody. And I was kind of excited about it because I was finally giving a reprimand rather than getting a reprimand, which is always a better position to be in. So I was rehearsing what I was going to say, and my manager, my boss, sat down and he said something I'll never forget. He said, Dennis, no matter what you have to do as a leader, even if you have to fire somebody, when they walk out of the door, make sure they walk out with their dignity. And that was in 1982 that he said that. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And that goes back to that whole idea of being kind and regardless of the situation, to be present enough to understand that most people are doing the best they can. That person that's serving you and having it, brought out the wrong meal or whatever it is, they're trying their best. They're trying the best. And the worst thing that I think we can do is to blow up at people, and we're not being present and appreciating the moment that we're in.
Thank you for that. I really, really resonate with the concept of just being present and taking that moment to think about other people and having them leave that interaction intact.
And they're doing the best they can. You know, most people, they don't want to make your life miserable. You know, there are those out there, but that's the exception. Most people want to do a good job. They want to be helpful. And sometimes things just go south. But being kind, I think, is what makes the world a better place. So that's my purpose is to bring kindness to the world. I happen to do that through talking about customer service.
Mm. Love it, love it, love it. Thank you. That's fantastic. Just to switch to your particular topic, your area of expertise, which is customer service, mm-hmm. I think everyone listening to this podcast would agree having a great customer service experience makes perfect sense. I don't think you're going to get anyone who's going to say, you know, hey, I want to go out and create the worst possible experience for my clients, patients, whoever. No one says that. The fact, though, is that sometimes the customer service experience at many businesses is not great. And again, mm-hmm. while we acknowledge that people are doing the best they can, that's the given. Mm-hmm. What I want to ask is, why do some businesses struggle with that where others seem to be able to get it right? What is tripping them up?
I think there's two reasons. There's one, sometimes businesses already think that the product that they're selling or the service that they're delivering, like in the case of a dentist, that's the real product. They don't understand that what you're really providing is an experience, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. So I think part of it is just a misunderstanding that if I provide good dental care, then that's the name of the game. When in reality, that's what I expect in the first place is the patient. Mm. You know, I expect it's excellent dental care that I'm going to get. But all of those other moving parts play a part in the experience. And so I think sometimes they forget about how important the overall experience is. Other times, I think people think that all I have to do is teach my people some customer experience principles, and then I, you know, wipe my hands of it. We've checked that box off, and that's all that has to happen. When the reality is, as leaders, we've got to be relentless in keeping that message of service excellence in front of our people. Mm. So that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is helping organizations identify what's the experience that you want to create, and then how can you keep that message in front of your people all the time? You know, you and I talked earlier before we started recording about the importance of consistency. Mm. Yeah, I'm a big believer in consistency. And the only way you can do that is by being relentless and keeping that message in front of your people.
I'm hearing you say that, and I get it and I understand it. And I think everyone would listen to this and say, that makes perfect sense, Dennis. Keeping the message in front of people and creating that culture, that ethos within the organization around service obviously requires conscious effort, constant mm-hmm. reinforcement, as you said. To the people listening to this that say, Dennis, I get it, and I'm so busy juggling other priorities. How do I keep that in front of my people? How do I embed that into the DNA of the organization while I'm dealing with, you know, Mrs. Smith's broken tooth, the emergency patient who's in pain, and juggling all the competing priorities? I know that's a hard thing to kind of ask you and for you to give a practical answer, but do you have any insights around that?
Well, for one thing, I will say it is hard. You know, it is hard to do it. That's why a lot of organizations don't, is because it does take commitment to keep that message. But if you truly believe that it's important to deliver outstanding service resulting in loyalty, in patient loyalty, then you do make the time to do it. But the other thing to keep in mind is there are certain things you're already doing. You're already hiring people. Mm. You're already onboarding people. You're already having team meetings about things, you know, about a new piece of technology or whatever it may be. You may have your Monday morning huddles. There are a number of things that we have one-on-one conversations with team members. So there's things that we're already doing that we can weave the customer service message into. You know, when you're talking about, you know, we've got this new piece of equipment, let's come together and talk about how to use this new piece of equipment. What this allows us to do is to provide a diagnosis quicker and more accurately for our patients. And we need to let them know that we're proud that we're able to do that. And so you can take all of the things that you're already doing and weave that service message into those elements. And that's, again, you know, when I look at what made it work for me when I worked at Disney World, is that message of service was everywhere. Hmm. And it wasn't just a training class. Training was a part of it, but it wasn't just a training class. It was everywhere. You know, you sit down at your computer and you pull up your screensaver, and there was a message about guest service on there. There were things on the walls about excellent service. So I think the takeaway that I would say for the listeners is think about what you're already doing and think about what you want the customer experience to be, the patient experience to be, and just merge those two things together. And it works. It works.
I sometimes think as well, Dennis, that there's probably opportunity. And what I mean by that is, well, firstly, there's always opportunity, but I started the conversation by saying, why do some businesses struggle to do it? And the inference being that some of the large corporations, I won't name names, but by industry, telecommunications, and that kind of big sort of organization, sometimes there's an impersonal service. There's a call the 1-300 number and go through the menu to finally maybe talk to a human if you're lucky.
If
you're lucky. We could talk about many businesses who might operate that way. The opportunity that I see is that lowers people's service expectations in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so if you can actually connect and be present with someone, it's such a novel experience for some people that they're going, oh, wow, I've just remembered that my humanity has come through, you know, in this particular interaction, or someone's been human enough to talk to me or kind enough to engage with me. So where do you see the opportunities for business owners to embrace this as part of their culture? And what sort of benefits might they expect if they can get this right?
Sure. Well, you're absolutely right in terms of it's rare. You know, one of the pushbacks I get is people will say, yeah, but customers expect so much. And I'm like, no, we really don't. You know, great service is so rare that even if you give me a smile and, you know, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard. What I recommend to organizations, and I think a dental practice can put this into place tomorrow, is to sit down with your team. And again, this takes commitment. I recognize it takes time to do these things, but sit down with your team and come up with three things that you would want patients to say about their experience with your practice. Three things that you would want them to say, because that makes you really focus on what you want your differentiator to be. So at Disney, we would say, we would want our guests to say it was a magical experience. They paid attention to every detail and they made us feel special. Okay, those are three things we would want our guests to say about their experience. So that's defining your brand. Then the discussion is, so what has to happen in order for our patients to say those three things about us? If we want them to say they really gave the personal touch, then we need to remember people's names. We need to remember things about their lives. We need to, you know, ask them how their kids are doing, whatever it may be. You start putting behaviors to those things that you want your patients to say. And that gets people thinking. That gets people on the team thinking about, how do I personalize this experience? Another thing that I recommend to organizations is just to look at the process through which somebody uses your services. So from the time they make the appointment to the time that they leave the practice at the end of their appointment, how do you make each step as excellent as it can be? And again, it's a discussion that you have with your folks, you know, at each step of the check-in experience and so forth. How do we make each step of it as excellent as it can be? What are the behaviors that would define it as excellent? What you're doing is you're engaging your staff in thinking about beyond just the tasks that they're doing. And I find that that's where the magic is if you can engage your people in this.
So I want to ask about Disney, because clearly Disney is known worldwide for its service. It's known worldwide for its excellence in that space and the training that goes into the cast and so on. I wanted to ask you about the interaction of technology with humanizing, because, you know, again, coming back to the modern world, we can use technology really well, but we run the risk of going from relational to transactional.
Mm-hmm.
How did Disney do it? How do they maintain that personal touch while obviously being a really high-tech organization?
Well, there's a number of ways, but one of the things that I think the technology has allowed Disney to do is to then use that time that was spent doing whatever the technology is now doing with building the relationship between the cast member and the guest. So whereas ticket takers used to talk about the different types of tickets there were and all of the moving parts with that and taking the ticket and so forth. And now with the new process with the magic bands that they have, it's removed a lot of the moving parts for the cast member, where now they can talk with people. So, hey, where are you folks from? Hey, have a great time while you're out there. When they see the child with the Mickey Mouse ears and their name stitched on the back, you know, hey, Bobby, how are you doing? When they see the little girl dressed up as Cinderella, you know, Cinderella, I can't believe you're actually here today. You know, all of those things, technology freed up some time that now allows the cast members to have those kinds of interactions. So it's there's two sides to it. One is the technology has made the experience more seamless, I guess would be the word I would use. And it allows the staff more opportunity to interact with guests.
Yeah, I love it. And I think that's exactly right. Because one of the things that I notice as well is some people use technology to take away those tasks from the humans to automate, systemize, and make things consistent from that point of view, but they don't then use that time to reinvest back into the relationship.
Yeah. And that's the secret, is to reinvest that time. You know, okay, so now you can build stronger relationships.
Yeah, fantastic. So with Disney, I know you've had a lot of experience there. You've obviously written the book, Lessons from the Mouse. I'd like to just talk a little bit about the Disney onboarding process, as well as another organization that I'm fond of, Zappos.
Yeah.
Both known for their service, both known for their obsession with detail, both known for going the extra mile, and both known for their onboarding process as well. And Disney has their traditions program. Zappos has
traditions,
their
traditions, yeah.
Yeah, Zappos has their own version of that. And what I understand from the Zappos one, I'm perhaps more familiar with that, is that every new hire has to go and sit in the call center and take the calls and be at the coal face interacting with the customers for a couple of weeks. And then, of course, Zappos are well known for offering people a bit of a bribe, in a sense, to leave. Yeah. If you don't like it, here's $500 or $1,000 or $2,000, and off you go. What I wanted to ask is, how can we take that concept and apply it in a smaller business where perhaps, you know, we don't have the budgets, we don't have the infrastructure that Disney or Zappos might have, but how can we take that concept and make it relevant to a smaller business?
Yeah. Well, look at the onboarding process with three lenses, and any business can apply this in their own world. So at Disney, this is kind of the framework, but don't think of the scope of it at Disney. Think of the principles. The first thing that you want a good onboarding process to do is to build pride in the person joining the organization. The way they did that at Disney Traditions is you had a pretty big class of people going through, you know, 30, 40 people in a class, and they would talk about where the place came from, Walt Disney and Roy Disney building the company and first full-length feature cartoon, first theme park at Disneyland, and, you know, so forth. So they talk about, you know, they're building pride in the organization. And every practice that's listening to this came from nothing, right? Mm. Every single practice, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into creating whatever it is today. And people need to know that. They need to carry that legacy on their shoulders. The second thing that I think that a good onboarding process does is it connects people to the true product. And the true product isn't the teeth cleaning. You know, the true product is what that is, the health benefits of the teeth cleaning. At Disney, we always said, we're not selling rides, we're selling an experience. And is, in fact, the true product at Disney is happiness. That's their stated true product. We create happiness. And that's very different. And we board people on rides or we sell hamburgers. That's a very different mindset. So what's your true product? And then the third thing is, so what's expected of you? What are the non-negotiables? You know, at Disney, one of the things they wanted people to say was how clean the place was. They paid attention to every detail, how clean the place was. Well, one of the things that happens during that new hire onboarding is they talk about, if you see a piece of trash on the ground, it's your job to go over and pick it up and throw it away. And it doesn't matter if you're a ride operator or you're the vice president of marketing. you go over and pick it up and throw it away. And just as a side note, the number one compliment that Disney World gets is how clean the place is.
Oh, wow.
And that's why. That's why. Because it's everybody's responsibility. So you think about it from a dental practice perspective of, okay, what do I want my patients to say? Three things, you know, that we want them to say. And okay, so I've got that. How do I build pride in the organization? Where did we come from? What were some of the key moments in our history? What is our true product? Put a name to it of what your true product, this is what we're all about here. This is what we're providing to those we serve. And then what are our non-negotiables then? What do our non-negotiables need to be? So that doesn't matter if you're Disney World or a single location dental practice, you can identify those and weave those into the onboarding process. At Disney, we happen to call it Disney Traditions. You know, Zappos probably has a different name, and you know, it doesn't matter what the name is. It's what you're doing as you're bringing people into the culture.
Yeah, I really, really resonated with that first point about creating pride. And I think that's really, really, really pivotal, because obviously we want people to come to work feeling a sense of pride. And I think if we can be intentional about that onboarding process, we can obviously create it. And what my, I guess my thought process is that if people don't get this right and they don't instill that sense of pride, the big risk then is that the team member comes to work feeling it's just a job, and and then that experience is eroded. So I think it starts right at that very, very beginning point of view where we do get that onboarding process, you know, nailed down and buttoned up really tightly.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the role of appreciation of team members. You spoke earlier about having to have that reprimand conversation with someone and making sure that they left with their dignity intact. But
right.
on the flip side of that, there'll be times where there's an appreciation style conversation. And I wanted to ask you a bit about the role of appreciation in pride, in the role, pride in their job, the role of appreciation of team members as it relates to customer service. Is there a relationship there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the top reasons that people will defect from an organization, you know, an employee quits an organization, is because of a lack of appreciation from their direct boss. And there's a lot of data that shows that. And again, one of the things when I'm working with leaders, so one of the most powerful things that you can do when you see somebody or hear somebody or hear about somebody on your team who has gone above and beyond, you know, has really exhibited the values in a in an excellent way that resulted in a patient letter, you know, or whatever it may be, that the most powerful thing you can do is to say thank you. You know, to go to that person and say, I heard what you did, or I heard about what you did, or however, and that's what we're all about here. That's what we're trying to bring to the world through what we do in our practice. And that's worth more than any cash prize, a gift card, you know, that, and I'm not against recognition programs, but what I'm more for is showing that appreciation. So you can do that for the individual. You can do that for the team. You can say, you know, Friday is appreciation day because I really appreciate everything that the team is doing. You can, you know, have a celebration, pizza party, whatever, to celebrate. But also just that one-on-one, hey, I heard how you did that, or I saw how you handled this situation. That was really good. You know, that, I guarantee you that person will go home that night and tell their family about the appreciation that was given to them. So one side of the coin is the appreciation side. The other side is the coaching side. When somebody isn't delivering the level of service that is expected, that you take the time to coach that person and say, hey, remember, this is what we're trying to create here. Our true product is this. And here's where I see the gap in your performance. So what can we do to close that gap? That's important as well. If so, one of my favorite leadership quotes, and I don't know who said it, I've Googled it and it's been attributed to many people. All I know is it wasn't me, but it said that intolerable service exists because intolerable service is tolerated.
Wow.
And yeah, isn't that a great quote?
Yeah.
And most companies, most organizations really do tolerate intolerable service. They kind of let it go. And when you see a situation that is not living the values, you know, where one of our people is not living the values, we've got to coach. That's real-time training. The example I always like to use is, imagine you come to Disney World and you're excited, you spent a lot of money, you're in the park and you see Cinderella, and your child, your precious child, wants to get Cinderella's autograph, runs over to her, tugs on her dress. Cinderella turns around and has a cigarette in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other hand and says, "Kid, I'm on break."
Yeah. You know,
what would be the impact on your child?
It'd be awful.
Yeah, I'd probably need therapy, right? There might be a lawsuit involved. But it all came crashing down. So it sounds kind of funny, but I always think about, in your world, in the dental world, in the dental practice, what are the potential smoking Cinderella situations? You know, and identify those, and don't let it go. Don't let the coaching moment go. Don't let the recognition moment go, and don't let the coaching moment go.
I think the timeliness of that is really important. You know, being able to address those things as they occur rather than letting time elapse. I know
absolutely.
Certainly in the past, I've let things go thinking I'd come back and address those. And of course, too much time has elapsed to make it meaningful, or I don't, or whatever. So I think you're spot on when you say you've got to get that right. Just on the smoking Cinderella syndrome, which I think you might have just coined a new phrase there, by the way, Dennis, the smoking Cinderella syndrome. Dennis, I was reading the book Ride of a Lifetime by Bob Iger, which is a wonderful book. And in that book, he shares some stories, some rather explicit stories where things did not work out so well on a given day for Disney, and how they had to try and manage that. And he shared one particularly sad story about a young girl being taken by an alligator at Disney at the, I think it was the Florida theme park.
Yeah, it was.
And of course, that's a very extreme example. Clearly, that's not necessarily going to happen in a dental practice, but things can and do go wrong on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, if we think about the smoking Cinderella story a moment ago, how do you recover when things aren't as good as they could be? Because I believe firmly that people will accept things don't always work out, but how you recover then becomes the experience they have.
Yeah. Well, you know, the alligator situation with the little boy that was taken by the alligator. I mean, that's off the charts. You know, that what do you do? How do you recover from something like that?
I don't know that you can.
And you really can't. You do everything that you possibly can, knowing that it's going to be inadequate, because that's just a horrific situation. And rare, you know, that type of thing is very rare. But when things do go wrong, you know, the first thing that I think we have to do when there's a problem is we've got to listen. We've got to let whoever it is that has the problem, we've got to listen to what they have to say, because clues can come from what they say to what you can do to help them. I think we need to apologize. You know, when we've screwed up, we need to be honest that I apologize. That shouldn't have happened that way. Do whatever you can do to come back from it. And 9 times out of 10, all the person wants to do is become whole again. So whatever that problem was, just fix it. Just fix the problem. Now, if it's an extreme situation, you may do fix it plus, you know, where you give them a coupon for something, or, you know, the service for this particular situation, it was no charge, you know, happy to do this at no charge. You fix it plus. And then apologize again. And again, I just want to tell you how sorry we are that this happened. And for 99% of the situations, you know, listen, apologize, fix it, and then apologize again. You do that, and most of the time, the person's going to walk away saying, you know, they handled that really well. They handled it really well. For bigger situations, you know, you may add to it saying, here's what we're doing to make sure that problem doesn't happen again. You know, so for some of those larger programs or problems, here's what we're doing to make sure that doesn't happen again. But I find that, again, most customers, patients in your world are pretty reasonable. And if you follow that and I hate to use the word formula because that sounds insincere. You know, each stage of it has to be sincere. Listen, apologize, fix it, and apologize again. That works most of the time.
It comes back to the kindness thing too, doesn't it? Because
it really does.
Yeah, it's what we would want for ourselves. When things go wrong in our world, and you know, we just want someone to make it right. So I guess it's do unto others to an extent as we would like to have done to ourselves.
Yeah, most of the time, just fix it, fix the problem, you know, and be nice to me about it. That's all we want.
You know, the amazing thing about that, Dennis, is, and I don't say this to diminish it, but it's not rocket science, is it?
It is not. None of this is rocket science, but it takes focus and it takes commitment. And that's where a lot of organizations fall down. They will say, yes, we know these things are important, but they're not willing to commit the focus and the effort to make it part of the culture.
Yeah.
And going right back to your point at the very beginning of our discussion, yes, it does take time. You know, anything that's worthwhile doing is going to take some time, but it pays off in patient loyalty.
Yeah.
I have been with the same dental practice for over 40 years. I started out with the father, and then he turned it over to his sons. So I see the sons, and now the third generation is coming in. So for over 40 years, I've gone to the same dental practice. And it's because I feel a connection there. They do everything right. They know me. One of the things that I love, and again, anybody can do this. When I walk in the door, they appear delighted to see me. That really says something. That feels really good. When you walk in and they say, hey, how are you? How are Danny and David? Who are my two sons? How are Danny and David doing? You know, how was your trip that I know you and Debbie took to France last month? How was your trip? Those kinds of things just make me feel like I'm the most important person in the world. And consequently, we've been with them for over 40 years.
I think that's fantastic. And I can't let it go unremarked. I've just got to say this because it's totally random, but I just realized you're all D's.
Yeah, we are.
Danny, David, Dennis, and Debbie.
It wasn't my idea, but yeah.
I love it. That's fantastic. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, and I wanted to ask a little bit about the difference between loyalty and retention. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Uh-huh. Well, retention, I think, is a part of loyalty.
Mm.
So, you know, we keep our patients, our existing base. Loyalty, I think, takes it another step.
Yeah.
Where now people are out there as your ambassadors. They're talking about your practice. When somebody moves in and says, hey, I'm looking for a dentist. Do you have any recommendations? And you say, absolutely. Dr. Harden is the greatest dentist. Been with him for 42 years, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think retention is certainly a noble goal, is to retain who we have. But to take it that extra step to loyalty, where people are actually out there as our ambassadors, that's where the real value comes from.
And it's that satisfaction versus raving fan kind of, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Thing we're talking about, isn't
it? Yeah, let's use that term, raving fan, because there's a mind picture that goes with raving fan. Raving fans, they cheer you on. They tell other people about how excited they are. So that raving fan idea, I think, is retention plus.
Yeah. Dennis, in your book, Lessons from the Mouse, I wanted to ask you, what is it that you most admire about Disney? Clearly, you've had a long history and a long association with Disney professionally and no doubt personally. What is it that you most admire about that organization?
That they know what they're all about and they're relentless in their delivery of the true product. They know we're about creating happiness. That's what they're providing. And so all of the decisions are made with that filter in mind. You know, is this going to add to the happiness of the guests? So is this new attraction, this new food offering, whatever it may be, that they're very clear on what they're about. It's a magical place. And so I'm very proud to have worked for a company that their mission in life is to make people happy. You know, and that just makes me very proud. And they're relentless in their pursuit of that. Now, they happen to make a lot of money at the same time doing that. Nobody had ever accused Disney of being a nonprofit organization.
Exactly. Okay?
So, but that is the result of what they're doing. The financial rewards are the result of making people happy and creating that extreme loyalty. If you go to Disneyland or Disney World and you ask somebody, have you been here before? 82% of them are going to say yes.
Wow.
Which amazes me that when you're walking around the park, the vast majority of people that you're seeing have been there before, which tells me that their formula works.
Absolutely. Because if they were charging those prices and people weren't getting the happiness, they might go once, but they wouldn't go back.
They wouldn't go back.
And so obviously there's a lot of, again, this is probably a whole topic we could talk about for days on, but there's a lot of price elasticity that comes when you deliver such a wonderful experience that Disney does.
Yeah. People, and there's a lot of data to back this up, but people are willing to pay more. Now, there's a threshold. Obviously, there's a threshold.
Of course.
People are willing to pay more for a great experience.
Mm. Okay. Fantastic. So there's a bit of a lesson there, because I do believe that in dentistry, there is a belief from some parts of the profession, not all for sure, but there are some people that hold the belief that patients only want cheap dentistry, convenient dentistry, and you know, the Disney experience you've just shared there would dispute that, or at least say, well, for some people that may be true, but it's not the whole market.
And there are people out there that I want it cheap. I that's my filter, is the want those people to be your customers or not. But again, the research shows that the vast majority of people are willing to pay more for a great experience. And I would say that those are the types of customers that we want for our organizations. So if you're marketing to the price conscious ones, that's a one way to go, but I think it's a very difficult way to go. It's hard to, because somebody can always beat your price, right? Mm. There's always somebody that can beat your price. So if you're building everything on that, that's a kind of a flimsy foundation to build your success model on.
I would 100% agree with you. Dennis, you have been really, really generous with your time today. I really believe you personify kindness. You live that value, you exhibit that value, and you've been very kind to share your knowledge, your wisdom, your expertise today. I know you've got a couple of books that you've written. We've only really spoken about Lessons from the Mouse, but you've got another book called Unleashing Excellence. Would you be able to give our audience just a bit of a pricey of what that book's about as well?
Sure. Lessons from the Mouse is more about the day-to-day principles of delivering excellent service, of like never let backstage come on stage, pay attention to the details because everything speaks, et cetera. Unleashing Excellence, on the other hand, is more of a leadership book on how do you build a service culture, from defining what the experience is supposed to be, to hiring new people, onboarding people, communicating with them, how you hold people accountable for this. So that's more of a cultural book of how you create a culture of service excellence. So Lessons from the Mouse is sort of the day-to-day, this is how you deliver great service. Unleashing Excellence is more about, here's how you as a leader can build it into the culture of your organization.
Fantastic. And for those people that like to get a copy of either of those books, the best place to get them would be on your website, Amazon. Where would you...
Amazon is always Amazon is the easy way to do it.
They
can even beat my price. I don't know how they do that, but sometimes you can get it cheaper on Amazon than you can get it from me. So you can go on the website, which is snowassociates.com, but also the books are available on Amazon, and you know, they're downloadable as well. So there's a variety of ways to get the books.
Well, thank you for that. Ladies and gents, I'm going to encourage you to head across to Dennis's website, snowassociates.com, because it is a fantastic resource in and of itself as well. The books, obviously, I'd encourage you to read. There's lots of really practical and useful information there, but there's a ton of practical and useful information on the website as well. And so I'd encourage you to not just get the books, but to also go and check out the website. I've been reading the blogs and watching videos and all those sorts of things there. And it's a really, really wonderful resource. And again, Dennis, I think you should feel really proud of what you've put together there. It's a really good resource vault for everyone.
I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Again, Dennis, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening over there in Florida, our morning here in Canberra. But I hope when this pandemic is over, I hope we can get you down to Australia, and we'd love to see you out in our part of the world.
That would be wonderful. I love Australia. I would love to get back there.
Well, we'll even take you to the places that aren't so humid, so you have a break from the humidity.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.